I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Today's conversation on First Lady and Friends was with a dear friend, a new friend to me, but one that I feel such a kinship to, Renee Ingalls. She's absolutely a delight. She's so much fun. I can't wait for you to hear our conversation. Let's get proximate. We are back here on First Lady and Friends, and I've been looking forward to this episode for a really long time. We've been trying to get this guest for a really long time, and she has become one of my most favorite people. I feel like we're kindred spirits now. We have had such I've had such a fun experience getting to know her. It is the one and only Renee Ingalls. Welcome to the podcast.
What an introduction. Seriously. No, that's well over and above. I actually, just before I came here, I was looking through your list of guests that you've had on here as your friends. And I feel honored, one, to be your friend, but two, I feel like a complete imposter coming on your podcast. But I thought, you know, why wouldn't I give 45 minutes to an hour just to sit here and have a bit of a chin wag with you? So here I am.
I love it so much. And of course, she is the lovely Australian. And you hear that. I mean, people, you have to realize in the US, like, we just like melt like butter when people with your accent start to speak. But so let's talk about that. You mm-hmm. grew up in Australia. I have to say, my dad served his LDS mission in Australia. So I have this kinship to Australia because I grew up singing Australian like folk songs because my dad loved the guitar.
And
he
there
played
are some
the guitar.
Great ones. Yes.
You know, Waltzing Matilda like was a big part of our like growing up experience. So yeah, so tell me a little bit about your growing up time.
Yes, well, I am Australian. I have to say, people always say that they really love hearing our accent speak, and I love being Australian. I'm so incredibly proud of that. And then when I hear another Australian here in the States speak, I literally look at them and go, is that the way I sound? Do I sound like that? It almost takes me back a little bit because we would say in Australia that we sound a little bit bogan. So it's nice to know that you actually do appreciate the accent. But yes, very, very proud Australian here, as is my husband, Joe. I have spent all of my life. It's interesting when I think when, you know, hindsight's a wonderful thing and the circle of life somehow always comes back around and you start to understand different bits about your life and upbringing. I think as a child, I was always a real homebody and really loved my safe environment with my family and my friends. And actually up until I was probably 12 or 13, got really homesick. You know, I hated leaving home, couldn't sleep over at my friends' houses. And then actually started making netball teams, which we'll get onto netball a little bit later. I know that you've done your research, Abby, and had to go away on these week-long trips. So to be sitting here now telling you that I've been living in Salt Lake City for close to 8 years would have come of a big shock to my family and friends as I was growing up, because I never thought I would have left Australia. And here I am, and I absolutely love living over here in Salt Lake City in the US. Pretty traditional childhood and upbringing. I'm the eldest of three kids, which I think explains a lot about me and my personality. My parents are wonderful, wonderful people that have been married for over 45 years, I think it is now. gave us as kids every single opportunity you could ever imagine under the sun. I played 10 different sports, dancing, swimming, taekwondo, netball, basketball, tennis, you name it. Our parents gave all three of us the opportunity to do that, did two musical instruments, just every opportunity was thrown at us to find out what we were passionate about and to run with that. I miss Australia immensely. I haven't been back for 2.5 years because of the pandemic. So if you had told me 2.5 years ago that I wouldn't see my family, for close to 2.5, 3 years, I absolutely would not have believed you because we're a really close-knit family back there. So missing home a lot, but Salt Lake City is probably more than our home away from home now. It really is home at the moment.
That's amazing. So there were three kids. Mm-hmm. You're the oldest. Brothers, sisters?
A younger brother and a younger sister.
Okay. Okay. And they're equally athletic and...
Yeah, my brother was by far the most athletically blessed of all of us. Okay. He chose not to go on with his sport, and I think he's kicking himself now in his later years.
What was he doing?
He was a really good AFL footballer. Have you heard of AFL football? Also another Australian sport?
Australian
football?
Maybe I don't. I'm thinking like rugby style, right?
It's that sort of style.
Okay, yeah.
Little bit different. I could be here for 2 hours on this podcast explaining all the sports that we play that you don't. But my younger sister was more the creative one, so she's very creative. She's now a nurse working as a frontline worker.
Oh, gosh.
My brother is a tradesman. He's an electrician and he's also a qualified builder. So he's got both, but... Yeah, we all definitely loved and played our sports throughout, but I was probably the one that wanted to make it into a career.
Were you in kind of a rural area or were you right in...
We grew up in the bush. The actual suburb was called The Patch. So okay. I spent much of my teens years known as the Cabbage Patch Kid.
I had one.
Yeah, so did I. But yeah, probably not far enough away that you'd call it country, but it was about an hour and 15 minutes out of... the city, and it was bush, quite bushland.
Yeah. And was that city, is it Melbourne? Or?
Yep, Melbourne, okay. Victoria. Yeah.
Okay, that's what I was thinking. Okay, so let's talk about you are the athlete of the family.
I can laugh and say yes because my husband agrees. I don't feel like I'm doing a disservice.
But I think it's an interesting thing that people maybe don't know, mm-hmm. is that you were a professional athlete as well. Tell me a little bit about your professional athlete journey.
Yeah, I was in the as an actual professional getting paid to play netball for 17, 18 years, which is a really long time. I actually went pro when I was 15.
Wow.
In a sport called netball. And I know a lot of Americans that are listening right now are raising their eyebrows going, what? What did she say? Here's how I explain it over here. If I'm honest, the first few years that I spent over here, I just couldn't be bothered explaining it. So I told people that I was a basketballer. But now that netball's getting a little bit more on the map, I feel like I should, you know, be a bit more truthful. There are 7 players on each team. It's on the same sort of court as a basketball court, except we have a few different lines. It's the same size hoop, but with no backboard. And you're in specialized positions. You can't run with the ball. You can take... one or two steps, but not put your grounded foot back down, and you can only hold the ball for 3 seconds. Mm. So it's quick. Okay. I always argue with Joe that netballers are tougher than basketballers. In basketball, you can get fouled out after 6 fouls. In netball, you for one possession, you stand out of play, and then you're back in the game. So you can hit, bump, maybe not tackle, but I'm sure it's been done before.
is there like a red card? What's the if you
tackle? It'd have to be pretty serious to get a red card. Okay. No, none of that. But yeah, it's a really fast power speed sport. We play 4 quarters, just like basketball, 4 15-minute quarters. And I love it and I miss it a lot.
Oh, I can imagine. That's got to be a real transition. Let's talk about, so you were playing, you've been professionally since 15, mm-hmm. you met Joe.
Ooh, I met Joe when I was 21 and I was 22 and he was 21, which is lifetimes ago now. Both playing professional sports in Melbourne. He was playing basketball for the Dragons at the time. I was playing netball for the Melbourne Phoenix at the time. Melbourne Vixens, I think we were by then. we had both just won premierships. So we'd actually lived in quite a lot of the same circles outside of our sports, because netballers and basketballers sort of grow up playing together around each other, had a lot of the same circles of friends. I'm only going to say this because we recorded a podcast together the other day together, and Joe admitted himself that I had absolutely no interest. There was no interest whatsoever. And he chased me for a little while. But once I actually sat down and met Joe, you know, he had me laughing pretty much straight away. And those here in Salt Lake City that know Joe is that he is known for his good humor. So he's always able to make me laugh, and has for the last 12 to 13 years. But we, yeah, just had a lot of the same friends, actually met and started hanging out. And he moved to Europe a month later and hasn't had a Christmas at home since. So wow. That's a fun fact for you. He hasn't been home for 12, 13 years for a Christmas time. He's played overseas ever since then. So I think we were just hanging out and enjoying each other's company for a month or so, knowing that he was going to move overseas. I definitely wasn't prepared to give up my career and move overseas or anything like that. So we did long distance for probably 8, 9 of our 12 years together.
No kidding.
Yeah. So wow. We sort of, once he got on the plane to Europe, just sort of said, well, that was lots of fun, all the very best, and we might connect later. And then back in the day, it was Skype. But every day since he left, we had been on Skype. So
wow. I
did that Christmas. I went over to visit him, and here we go. The rest is history. We're married and have 3 kids.
That's so cool. but along the way, then you had your twins,
mm-hmm.
and you retired.
Was it like leave with
the intention of coming back, or how did that work? And in your professional sports, like, I don't know enough about it because we don't have any professional women's sports in the state.
Yes. Well,
unless I'm missing something, but we don't have a WNBA team. We don't have a soccer that I know of.
No, not here.
I mean, we used to have the Monarchs, but I don't think they're with us anymore. So anyway, my experience is zero. How does it work when, you're a woman having a baby?
I had just signed a new 2-year contract in Australia with the Adelaide Thunderbirds, was who I was playing with at the time, and found out I was pregnant. And that had never actually happened in our sport before in Australia. So
really? It
was kind of up to the team and I to pave the way of what that was going to look like in terms of maternity leave or any of those sorts of things that hadn't been done. I took a leave of absence because I just couldn't get my head around saying the words, I'm retiring.
Right.
Given that I was the captain of the club, I had just signed 2 more years and kind of came on pretty suddenly. So I took a leave of absence. I didn't know what that meant at the time. A lot of people said to me, you're going to have twins. You're probably not going to get back on the netball court. You need to get your head around that and understand that. But I took the leave of absence so that once I'd had the kids that I could make that decision myself. Well, they were wrong, because the burning desire didn't go away. It actually got even stronger. I wanted to get back on that netball court more than anything in the world, and to do it in front of my kids. So 8 months after they were born, to the exact day, I played my first professional game back, and then played out that year, which was incredibly tough on so many levels, because I had twins that were 8, 9, 10 months old that weren't sleeping at all. And I was trying to do the kids and manage all of that. Joe was still overseas, manage that with help from my mum, and still try and perform and play and all of those things. And really enjoyed being back on the netball court, but just felt that having a long distance relationship with twin babies at home probably wasn't fair on our family. So I made the decision to retire, and that lasted about 8 months, I think.
Yeah.
The next off season, when we went back to Australia, it just happened to be completely out of luck. The home team actually had a pregnancy with a player that played my position, and they said to me, would you like to come in and train? And I said, well, I've just trained for a half marathon in Salt Lake City. I'm not netball ready. That is completely different to the power speed sport that netball is, but hey, I'll give it a crack. And then I actually ended up playing another 2 years, and probably my most enjoyable 2 years in netball. Tough, because Joe was still here playing in the NBA in Salt Lake City. So I was literally in the last preseason, I was doing 2 weeks here, 2 weeks in Australia, 2 weeks here, 2 weeks in Australia,
oh,
until I went
goodness.
Back. Yep. It was insanity. But, you know, we did it and I knew it was going to be short term. Sporting careers can't last forever. And I wanted to do my career, which isn't in the States. And Joe wanted to do his and I wanted to support him doing that as well. So we made it work. However, in the January of 2019, which was the last season I'd played, we were a couple of months out from starting the season. Our eldest son, Jacob, one of the twins, was diagnosed with autism. So I think at that moment, I pretty much, or I went backwards and forwards, should I just retire now? I made the decision to keep on playing and then pretty much decided at that point that that would be my last year out on the court. In terms of the actual year of netball, that was my favourite year I've ever played on court. I just felt like on the court I just was able to release everything and the struggles that we were feeling off the court, and it was really tough. It was hard. So fronting up to the trainings and going home to the kids and working out therapies and behaviours and all of this new world that had been thrown at me was really hard, but it actually made the on-court side of netball you know, all the more fun, essentially. I played the sport because I loved it and I had the opportunity to do it. It wasn't a job anymore. I think in hindsight, that was a wonderful thing because that was my last season just before the pandemic hit. And then really, I wouldn't have been able to be traveling backwards and forwards anyway to play. So, you know, I would have had to retire a little bit after that anyway, just given, you know, geographically it wouldn't have worked. And then netball season went into a bubble just like the NBA did and all of that. And that just wouldn't have been possible with the kids. But I'm really glad that I did go back and play after having them. I now have three kids. The burning desire is still there. I still want to play. I still wish I could play. That's off the cards. That's not going to happen. But I haven't yet filled that gap of what is actually next for Renee Ingalls.
Wow. Well, we want to continue this conversation. We want to get into your kids and we want to talk about what's going on there. We'll be right back.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. Don't miss Cold's new season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
We are back here with the one, the only, Renee Ingalls, and we are having such an incredible conversation about your time as a professional athlete and the things that you were going through with motherhood at the same time. And you mentioned that you had these twins, Mila and Jacob, and talk to us a little bit about the journey with Jacob. You talked about his diagnosis, but let's talk a little bit about, and that's kind of probably where I connected with you.
Yeah.
And I knew a little bit of your story, and so I watched it from afar.
Yeah.
from social. But tell us a little bit about the story and when you got that diagnosis.
Yeah, I think ever since the twins were born, given that we had a male and a female, everyone was always saying to us, don't ever compare the twins. And that is the easiest thing to say and the most impossible thing to do, especially when there is possibly an extra concern that you're having. You're going to compare them in everything that they do. And they're little companions. So, of course, they're doing everything together. And I think Jacob actually hit all of the physical milestones first. He did all of that stuff first, but it was around the time that they were 2 years old that I started asking myself some questions. I said, I'm just not sure that everything's right here. Miller will look at me, give me eye contact, laugh, smile, make noises, make sounds. Socially, if we had little play groups and things like that, that I would take them to, Miller was in it with all of the other kids and Jacob would head to the other end of the room and sort of play on his own and was happy to just be in his own sort of world, which isn't necessarily abnormal, but I think it was just different to what all of the other kids were doing. Everyone around me, including the kids' pediatricians, our families, Joe, said, you're overthinking it. Because I am. I'm an overthinker and I look at every possible avenue of everything. So I understand where they were coming from, but there was just something in my gut that just didn't feel right. And I think once I started pointing these things out to Joe, he got on the same page pretty quickly. So as soon as we came back over here to the States, we actually changed pediatricians just because I wanted another opinion. And as soon as I sat down with her, she's still our pediatrician now and our pediatrician for Jack as well, all three kids. She said to me, you are his mother and you know him best, better than anyone. So if you are having these concerns, let's explore it further and see what we, where we come to. And Joe and I had, there was obviously a lot of worry over that. I think the one thing that I've learned about this whole process is that feeling like you have a concern with your child isn't as simple as going in and telling your pediatrician that you have a concern with your child. There is a long diagnosis and assessment process that for us took 3 to 4, 5 months, I think, before the actual day that we got his diagnosis. And it was hard and really stressful, but I felt like I would do the assessment and diagnosis process. And if we find out that there's nothing, I haven't lost anything, but I didn't want to not do any of it, hope for the best, and then miss out on a diagnosis and the resources and interventions that Jacob might have needed. However, in saying all of that, I was ready to get a diagnosis or ready to hear something or be told something about a delay or something that Jacob had, but actually hearing the words come out of the specialist's mouth on January 8th in 2019 just hit me for six. It was a shock, an absolute shock, even though I was prepared for it. And then the couple of weeks following that, I don't think I slept at all. I was researching everything. You walk out of the doctor's office with this, you know, handful of pamphlet of booklets and resources and websites to look up and therapy centers to call. And of course, I was like, well, I have to do it all today on the same day that he's diagnosed so that tomorrow he starts. Well, that's not how it goes. And there was actually 18-month waiting lists on almost every therapy center or individual therapist. And it was a big learning process. But I literally just wore people down. I called and called and called and called and said, is there an opening? They said, nope, there wasn't an opening an hour ago either. Well, is there an opening now? So I literally just wore people down to get him into therapy. And that's honestly how I got my foot in the door. Absolutely nothing else. 2.5 years down the track, 12 months ago, Jacob had no voice. He had sounds. He'd say, wow, no, yes, and bye. That's about it. And I can honestly remember the conversations that I had with my parents, with Joe, saying, I just want Jacob to say mum and I want him to be able to say I love you. Well, now 2.5 years down our journey, I have a little boy that I can't stop talking. It's been so overwhelming and so tough, but just the best journey I think I've ever been on. And the first thing that I say to any parent that ever reaches out via Instagram or that I meet in a shopping mall or that comes up or is going on a similar journey is that this is absolutely the best thing that can happen to you and your family. Whilst it's overwhelming when you get the news and all of the resources that you have to go through and appointments that you have to set up and specialists that you need to take them to or therapists that they need to do, it is so incredibly rewarding and I would not change Jacob or that diagnosis for anything. He is the most special, beautiful little boy that I actually think has given more to our family and now to our greater purpose, which is how we are sitting across the table being able to have a chat. I just think it's added so much to our lives. And I honestly wouldn't change him for the world.
That's such a beautiful story. And I think gives a lot of parents hope that are going through a similar journey. And there are a lot of them. There are a lot of people going through this right now.
There seriously are. And it makes me so sad that people would say to me, why are you telling your story publicly? And I go, well, why wouldn't I? Like if it helps one other parent or one other person, because I can honestly say the greatest advice that I could give anyone that's going through anything similar, regardless of what a diagnosis is or if your child's got challenges or being bullied or whatever it is, it's not the doctors, it's not the therapists, it's not the websites, it's not the self-help books that you read. It's speaking to a parent that's going through or has been through something that you're going through yourself, and it's that connection. That's what really helps. So if someone jumps online and looks at my social media page or reads an article that has been written or sees something on the news or listens to this podcast that go, oh my gosh, I'm not alone, that person knows exactly how I feel, or oh, wow, those two, you know, Joe plays in the NBA and I'm his wife. We make jokes about it. You know, they've got essentially a platform and a profile and they're not scared to say that they're going through the challenges. Like, we're all human. And for me, I think the greater purpose of all of this for me has been, well, how can I help the next person next to me or someone else that's going through the same thing? And it's incredibly rewarding for us too.
Yeah. Well, and I think too is how can we look at, I think you telling your story helps other people to look at your experience and say, I don't need to be afraid of having a child with different challenges, or I don't need to be afraid to let my child connect
or
with
be
someone.
Who they are.
Yes.
Whether you have
yes.
a disability, a developmental delay, like the color pink and not the color blue, whatever it is about you or your child, let's just celebrate the differences. And I think in, I don't know whether you say it's the smallest way or the biggest way, the day that Jacob was diagnosed, what it forced Joe and I as parents or us as a family to do was to drop expectation. And that's expectation that I didn't even know I had. My kids don't need to be sports stars. They don't need to be engineers or geniuses or a rocket scientist. They can be whoever they want to be and whatever they want to be. But I didn't realize I had an expectation that they'd do this or do that. What it actually brought us back to on a day-to-day basis, and now with Miller, our daughter, and our other son, Jack, and us in our marriage, in our careers, all of those things, is to celebrate the small things, the small milestones that maybe with Miller we would have missed or have not celebrated. I think at the end of the day, that's what this has actually taught us. And
yeah. Well, and I think, too, of parents with kids that maybe don't have those different abilities or whatever, but I mean, even myself, I look at your story and say, what expectations do I have of my child being a certain thing? I mean, it doesn't even matter what kind of abilities or disabilities or whatever it is. Sometimes as parents, we have this idea that we hold our children up as trophies.
Yeah.
And
I think social media has made all of that, highlighted that even more, I think.
I agree.
At the end of the day, if my kids are happy and healthy, regardless of what it is that they're doing, if they're passionate about it and happy doing it, that's ticked the parenting box 101 for me. Because what more could you want?
Absolutely. And I think that's a beautiful perspective. I want to keep talking about this. We'll take a break and be right back. We're back here with Renee Ingalls telling her story about her journey as an athlete, as a mom, as a mum. I have to say,
mom.
We have to say,
my kids have actually got the American accent.
Do they?
Well, Jacob's going through all these speech therapies and stuff, and he's finally found his voice, and it's American. No one more disappointed than my husband Joe. I just think it's really cute because they both, Miller and Jacob, they have an American accent but Australian words. So
yes.
It's a bizarre twang, like where they meet in the middle.
So there's this whole, the Peppa Pig, do you know Peppa Pig?
Of course I know.
Yes, Peppa okay.
Yes.
So when you're little, and my kids kind of miss that. They were kind of on a little older when that kind of became a thing. But my little nephew would call like gas petrol,
and yes.
then what were some of the other things? And we would just laugh and we're like, what are you saying? And it's because he'd been watching Peppa Pig.
Yep, that's right.
Zebra.
Yep. Zebra, trunk, boot, diaper, nappy. There's plenty. I could be here all day.
Well, yeah, as I say, my dad being there, I mean, we learned all these little phrases that he would talk about. So, it's so great. I need to visit Australia.
Oh, please do. We'll host
it
you.
It is such a bucket list item for me.
Please do it after the pandemic, because sitting for 2 weeks in hotel quarantine in Australia is not ideal.
Are Australia still sort of locked down?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, completely locked down. So I will, once I'm back in Australia at some stage, I will have you guys over and
come in. And we need to get you down
to
the farm.
You a barbecue.
The funniest, sorry, we're totally off topic, but the funniest thing I think was when, I think it was Shaq, and he's interviewing Joe, and he starts like on this like pirate accent, and I'm like, what is he doing? He's so embarrassing himself.
I know.
And Joe's just sitting there like, You're an idiot.
Yeah, because not everyone uses the same Australian jokes and slang on us.
Yeah. I haven't heard that before. I haven't heard shrimp on the body before. Like, okay. You're the funniest. So let's talk. I know you guys are very, when I say you guys, I mean you and your family mm-hmm. are very active in some organizations with autism spectrum disorder and some of the other things. Tell me a little bit about what you're doing there.
Yeah, we first started out jumping on board as board members, executive board members for ASD Kids in Australia. That's just honestly providing support and therapies to families who simply can't afford it. The system is a little bit different here than in Australia. Insurance is far better here. Jacob is getting a lot better
really?
Services than what he got when we were back in Melbourne.
Oh,
absolutely.
Good.
It's a lot harder back in Australia. So there is just families just can't afford it. For example, Jacob was at a therapy center. He was there. He was doing about 30 hours a week. And we met this other family with a little boy. And the mum just seemed so lovely and looked stressed. And I said, are you all right? She's like, yeah. And I said, I don't see you here. I only ever see you once or twice a week. And she said, yeah, we're only here on Wednesday mornings. He needs 30 hours a week of therapy, but we can only afford two. And so hearing so many stories of that, it was like, okay, well, how in our position that we're in, how can we give back and get therapy to more of these little kids so that they can have the best opportunity, I say in quotation marks, normal life, whatever that is.
Yeah.
And then over here in the States, we're on the board at Culture City. And same Culture City, I think when I first learned about them, I thought, oh, that's great. They put sensory rooms in places so that kids can feel safe. That's what I thought it was. Well, there is so much more to that. You would have seen here in Salt Lake City, they developed along with us the programs for the Salt Lake City Police Department to be sensory certified and are just doing so much good work across the country. So again, it's one of those things where we just feel so lucky to be on the board. And then here, Show Up Utah. I honestly, the day that I got the messages from you guys, we actually connected through Instagram, I think it was.
We did. Well, and Spencer, I think, had
given the wrong number.
Remember? That's what it was.
Yes.
So Joe had given Spencer, because they had done some commercials and stuff together
yes.
before.
Yes.
So I
and
think
Spencer
he had
was
the
bravest man in Salt Lake City to have given Joe the deputy. Remember the deputy job for a day? I was like, oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
That was a really fun day. Well, it was my
Don't
birthday,
tell
actually.
Joe that. Oh,
did you know that?
No,
so it
I
was my birthday.
That.
And the governor had, it was the one and only time in the 7.5 years that he was lieutenant governor. The governor was going in for a little minor surgery, but anytime they
yes.
go under anesthesia, they have to transfer power
Makes
to
sense.
The lieutenant governor.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was this whole, we did this whole joke thing about it. Like we had so much fun with it, but it was like,
so did Joe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm so glad.
Yeah. Yep.
Because we thought, how great. He's number two. He could be the number two, the lieutenant governor. And I think he was out of
honestly,
the state to a ball game somewhere else.
Yeah, probably. Wouldn't
and we just
me.
Had this whole thing where he issued all these proclamations, and it was we did have the blessing of the governor at the
course.
Time because anyway we just had so much fun with it. But yeah, we love
anyway,
that Joe was in
Joe
on the joke.
Joe tells everyone back in Australia that he had a day as deputy
lieutenant governor.
Yes, so let's not do that again because his head's big enough. Anyone who knows Joe knows that. But no, back to the point is we feel incredibly lucky to be able to be part of organisations like 4ASD Kids, Culture City and Show Up Utah because I think for so long, especially for me, being in retirement or coming closer to retirement, not necessarily knowing what was next, but knowing that I wanted a purpose and I wanted to give back, in particular to kids. But didn't know what that was going to look or feel like. So in a way, I think it's circled back around and maybe that's why Jacob was given to us so that we learned what our next purpose was. But I kind of think that you know, people say, wow, you guys do a lot and you give back. But I feel a bit guilty when people say that because it's so selfish of me as well, because I do it because I get so much joy and love out of doing it. It's genuinely a passion of mine and I love every second of it. So I feel very lucky and very privileged to be able to say that I'm a part of those three very special organizations.
Well, we are thrilled to have you, especially on our Show Up Utah board.
I still feel like an imposter on that board.
No,
I'm not going
at all.
To lie. Every time we have a board meeting or a catch up, I'm like, oh goodness, these people
well,
are
now
so
you know
incredible.
How I feel. I am a small town girl from a farm and I'm doing stuff like this that imposter syndrome is a real thing. So I get it, and that's what's been fun. And what's been fun about the board that we've put together is we have people like you, Ashley Smith, Kristen Andrus, folks who, you know, we had a conversation this offline, but we were talking about, you know, having husbands who are in the limelight.
People
know them. People think they know them. And there are some partnerships that, you know, the other side of the partnership that maybe people aren't aware of. And what's been fun is for me to look at that and say, I can see somebody that feels like me and is like, I have something to contribute. And sometimes I get overlooked because of the bright spotlight that comes with the other side of the partnership. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's just been fun for me to get to know you. And again, we have this kinship, I feel like, because of a lot of those types
of things.
It's
funny. I feel like we haven't known each other for that long, but I feel like sitting here chatting to you or when we're offline or in board meetings or having a quick chat before the meeting starts, that I genuinely feel like we're souls that have known each other for years.
I
relate on a lot of levels, which is fun.
So it's fun for me. Just one like curiosity question for me.
Okay.
I've had kids that played sports, not a ton, or done other activities. We in our family decided, like, our kids, they were really small and made up for it by being slow. So the athletics didn't really, you know, we didn't get really a lot there, but, you know, music, and they found their niches. Found the thing that they're good at, and which is fun. But I have watched a few kids like doing sports and in a situation, again, not huge, not like NBA finals type things, but like,
it doesn't matter what level though.
But that's my question. Like, you're sitting here watching your husband in like one of the most stressful, I always say, because we do like, you know, little league stuff, and I'm like, hello, it's not the NBA championship, dad, sit down, like, or mom,
yep, but,
like, calm down, it's all good. But you really are there, and like, how do you like emotionally, how do you watch that, or even yourself? It's probably easier when it's you doing it, and how does he watching you not get?
So I get far more nervous or stressed or worried about a result than what Joe does. Joe is what you see is what you get. And the Joe that you guys see in the media and interviews is exactly the same as the Joe that I have at home as my husband, except I don't laugh at his jokes and you guys all laugh at his jokes. But yeah, sitting there watching, he's just cool, calm and collected the whole time. I think the difference for me and why I feel the stress and anxiety during a game, which I do my best not to show. I just sit there and do the small claps and a cheer here and there until the playoffs come. And then it's like this inner beast comes out of me. Like, I was standing up in my seat and stuff, and I'd sit back down and go, oh my goodness.
The playoff game that I was to, and I think you were up there, and I was like, I wanted to be like, how are you here? Like, not losing your mind.
I do lose my mind. I'm just very good at concealing it. But I think that I see how much emotion, time, work, effort, all of those things behind the scenes, behind all of the bright lights when the guys run out onto the court and do their thing. I see all the blood, sweat and tears that go into it. So I think that means so much more to me. But I think what keeps me grounded is Joe, is just the way he handles it and is about it. And he's just, I've never said Joe the basketballer. Joe is my husband, Joe. He is dad to the kids, and that's who he is at home too. And then as soon as he goes to basketball, that's where he, you know, changes it. I have to say, actually, the times that I get the most stressed is not when they're winning or losing or a game's close. It's when Joe, as everyone knows and calls him, he's quite known for his mouthy talk. I'm like, someone is going to turn and swing. One day, someone's going to be the first one to swing at him.
So I sit there going,
can you please just be quiet? Stop it. And then people always ask me, what does he actually say in those moments? And I'm like, we can't repeat that sort of thing. But someone one day is going to swing. So I sit there going, oh, no. So there you go. You heard it first.
I can't imagine because the first time I ever met Joe, that we were at some event and we met him there. And I said to him, I said, so you don't ever get technical fouls because they just love your accent so much. Like, you say stuff, right? And he just started laughing. He's like, yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
And so, like, seriously, like, maybe the next game or I can't remember, just not very long later, he gets a technical and I'm like, it was me.
Yeah. He's mean. Obviously, I never know during or after the games what he says, but then I'll often hear other people or I'll go to a charity function and meet someone that he's played against and they'll tell me what he has whispered to them during a game and I'll be like, I am so sorry.
But you can't take him seriously, right? They don't really take him seriously, do they?
We'll see. Hopefully this year is not the first year
that
someone swings.
We'll know when he gets swung at.
No, it's all in good faith and good fun.
I think that's what's so fun about it. And you guys, it's the two of you together, I think, are so endearing. The videos on it, I'm telling you, I still can't stop laughing about the swimsuit.
I never told him that I said that to you either. But, yeah, Joe likes to think he's funny. He always tells me that I'm not funny. So I'm always trying to think of a way to
get him.
Spice it up or make it funny. I don't know what you call it. But, yes, the dissolvable shorts. Renee
so
1, Joe 0.
So great. Oh, Renee, this has just been so much fun. And I hate to see it come to an end because this has been so delightful. But thank you again for sharing your story. And thank you for being a friend today.
Thank you so much for having me.
You can find Renee on Instagram @ Renee Ingalls and culturecity.org. Thanks for being a friend.